even
know. How are you?
There may be a lot more people doing than we think.
Oh, probably.
He's watching. Barnett, here.
Paul.
Paul, what is that? I'm calling you Larry now.
You know what? My dad's name is Larry, so he scared me. He passed away a few years ago.
Uh-oh.
Larry David. I'm terrible with names.
So we can wait 5 minutes? I don't know. We have a quorum. Okay, let's call the meeting to order. The Charter Review Commission of Wednesday, June 3rd. Let's stand up and say Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay.
Okay. So let's do the roll call.
Bill Limlick.
Here. We just started.
Maureen Lerner.
Here.
Camille. And George.
Nope.
There should be an extra seat there.
Mr. Conway.
Here. We got right here.
Kaylee is absent.
So there's your
and
seat.
Ken. Thank you.
Okay.
And Paul, I'm here.
And Paul.
Paul,
yeah.
I've got.
We have Paul and let's the minutes. Everyone read the minutes. So do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move to accept.
Maureen likes her own minutes. Second by Ken Walter. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. So, first we're going to have Lauren. Can you talk to us? From what we read with clarification here, we can have Zoom. And we would like to every meeting to have a link for Zoom. But I know that you have a problem with after 5 o'clock, correct? Our meetings are at 4.
You want to step up to a microphone?
Yes, please.
So we can hear you
please.
Up
yes.
I thought I heard you mumble behind me.
I don't know that I'd call it a problem, but we would be incurring expense because I have to have somebody monitoring.
If it's after 5.
Not even from 3 o'clock on when you start your meeting.
Oh.
Or 4 o'clock on from when you start your meeting, because each meeting conducted using video conferencing must provide the opportunity for members of the public to view the meeting via video and participate in real time where public comment or participation is authorized. What does that mean?
Well, I don't think, from what I understand, we do not have to authorize public comment on the Zoom. We just have to, if they come in person and we have public comment on the session.
Okay, but the last sentence is the big concern, which is where there's going to need to be live monitoring and I guess babysitting of the solution. In short, the public must be able to access and participate in the meeting virtually if video conferencing is being used.
Okay, so we would put a link to the agenda.
So my concern is I have to have staff dedicated to come to each and all of your meetings to babysit the technology solution? That's my concern.
Unless we do it.
No, he's saying that if we die, I would do it earlier, but you're
time,
now
time
saying
do,
that
time,
doesn't matter.
Time doesn't matter.
Yeah, he said he'd have to do it no matter what time it was.
Okay.
I've got a member or members of my staff that are going to be involved in these meetings as well because of the technology solution and needing to babysit it. And then there's the recording piece, the availability of it off the website within 5 days. The Zoom meeting needs to be set up in a very specific way so that it's recorded and then downloaded, made available, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So,
if we monetize this, what are we talking about? $2 million?
Well, no. I think the legislature could authorize it. Or right now we have a member that's viewing on my private WhatsApp. We're not voting on anything right now. So let me ask the county attorney. So yes.
More, the recordings of these meetings are already on the website.
The audio recording is on the website.
Yeah.
That's not what this says. This has nothing about audio. This says video conferencing.
But the audios have been on. We're always putting them on every morning.
No, that's, but The public must be able to access and participate in the meeting virtually if video conferencing is being used. So if you're using video conferencing for members, the way I'm reading this, for the members of the committee to participate, then you're opening it up automatically to the public, if that's how I'm interpreting that sentence correctly.
It's just the plain language of it would suggest your interpretation is correct.
Speak into the microphone, please.
Mr. Green's plain, assuming there's no reason to doubt the language of it, it does appear to be plain, simple language, not convoluted or jargon, not legal jargon, but based on your reading and of the plain text, I would say your interpretation is correct.
So as soon as you start using video to allow members of the committee to participate remotely, you have no choice, according to this, but to allow the public to access and participate in the meeting virtually if video conferencing is being used.
I mean,
so that requires me taking a staff member away from their regular duties and having to be here to that's my concern, because I'm losing a body.
No, I understand
every
that.
Time you
but
guys
we meet once a month for 2 hours, and we want to be able to properly review the charter.
Understood.
And to do our job and to do our due diligence. And it's a situation where everyone here is a volunteer, and sometimes it's inconvenient for someone to come to a meeting for whatever circumstance, and they would like to participate.
So if the legislature is sponsoring this, and this is a legislative function of sorts, if you will, and they're directing that I make staff available to make that happen, then that's what I'll do. I'm just outlining the concern that I have that I'm taking them away from the regular daily work duties and not getting stuff done on behalf of the rest of the county. And why?
No, I understand.
Okay, so I'm just
saying
that's my concern.
My question is this: Town of Thompson Planning Board, they have meetings. How do they handle this with the public? I have no problem with the public going to our Zoom meeting and watching our meetings. Do they do the same in Thompson?
I can't comment on
that. No,
sorry. Sorry.
Hi, I'm Camille.
Yes. Nice to meet you.
I'm sorry.
Adam Thompson, but planning board meetings, and you're not allowed to speak.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, but you can observe.
Right.
And the members also must be present.
Right.
So as I warned last time, very similar to what happened in the town of Mamikating during COVID, as soon as they opened it up to the public, unless you make sure that video is turned off across the board, you got to be careful about what some member of the public might decide to display on their video screen. I won't go into specifics of what, but it can get pretty embarrassing.
But we're talking about the county charter.
That doesn't matter what you're talking about.
On.
It's a matter of what the public wants to do when they're in their privacy of their own home. Yes.
They're blacked out.
That's fine. If video is turned off and they don't have the ability to turn it back on.
There's somebody there that controls it. Who could talk?
If there's somebody there to control it.
Everybody's muted and blacked out.
Yep. But there has to be somebody there to control it.
Can we control it?
Well, it's usually one of the board members.
Yeah.
If you're going to manage the meeting on behalf of the rest of the board, have at it, but you're going to be managing the meeting as opposed to listening and participating.
Well, I mean, one of the board
going on as
Ken,
far as the
Ken,
commission.
I'm sure you would like to control it.
That's not the issue. Number one is we have to have a policy written up. We have to have a resolution. We have to have a public hearing to adopt it. Whatever we adopt to have that, you just can't make it a resolution within the body.
No, we don't have to have a public hearing.
Sir,
yes,
we have to abide by the open meetings law of the state of New York, and if we're going to hold other people accountable, we have to be accountable.
We don't have the ability to hold a public hearing, Ken.
We have the ability. It may not fit in your time frame, but this is what the steps you have to go through. Number two, these signs are too small. We're going to have to have a sign made, and I took a picture of Governor Hochul meeting with some people yesterday, which was big, which could be seen on the TV screen, identifying who you are. These are the rules. Not telling you anything that's not
Ken,
true.
Ken, in all simplicity here, in all honesty, we are talking about nine members of our community who want to sit down, get to the work to review our charter and codes, to make recommendations if we have any changes.
We're
going to get bogged down in this technicality and minutia stuff. It's absurd.
Then why have laws?
That's why things don't get done.
The other thing is the public is entitled to see what every public body does in the decision-making process. And then once you open it up to Zoom, you have to advertise it in your agenda. There's so many days before you have to do that, the link that is there. And once you set it up, as Lauren says, they have a right to speak because the public has a right to speak during public comment.
They don't have a right to speak. They have a right to observe.
That's if you do not have public comment at your home base. If we have public comment, as we do at the end of our agenda, they have the same opportunity to do the same.
So we can take
that's
out
in a
public
town
comment.
Board meeting. That's not on a planning board meeting. Nobody gets to speak at all.
The only thing.
But hold on. But that is an extension of the law right now that's in place. So if we're not doing that already, we shouldn't change what we're doing.
We do have public comment.
For what?
At the end of the meeting.
If I may, based on the memo, you do have to have written procedures that cover member and public attendance must be established and posted on the county's website. So you do have an administrative task to establish a set of written procedures that does need to be published. And then members of the commission who are not physically present at any meeting can only appear via video conferencing due to quote-unquote extraordinary circumstances. So those extraordinary circumstances need to be met as defined by, it's not just a willy-nilly every meeting kind of thing. So I hate to use the term willy-nilly, I apologize, but
I don't know.
First thing that came to mind.
I sat on the Human Rights Commission. We sat, the people couldn't vote. But some people couldn't make it at times. One of us at the meeting opened up our WhatsApp application or an application just to listen in where it wasn't video, and they were able to listen in and make suggestions. This is not, we're not voting on legislation right now. We're not making recommendations to the legislature right now. We're right now in a research fact-finding committee. So I don't know why we cannot, maybe then just one of us, open it up so let members listen as long as we have a quorum here.
Okay.
And like we're doing right now with Paul.
You could do that, but they can't participate.
Well, they can make suggestions. And
they cannot participate.
Voting.
They cannot participate because you have not opened it up to the general public.
Guys, we can go round and round in circles.
They can just participate.
All right, Paul, go ahead.
Vote.
We can go round and round on this thing. I mean, I think it's silly.
We ask for a legal opinion. Read the legal opinion.
Ken, hold on. Let me just finish. We're all volunteers, okay? And we're doing our best to help and read, review a charter and see if there's changes. All right? Nothing may come of it. But it's not like we're doing, to Bill's point, I completely agree with Bill. We've got to get past this. We can get bogged down in rule and minutia, and we'll never get anything done. We won't even get past Zoom. I think Bill's suggestion is a good one. Someone should open their computer, and people can participate. What's the consequence if we're wrong? They're going to say all your work on the Charter Revision Committee wasn't worthwhile? I don't believe that. I think we're tied up in knots over nonsense.
I agree with Paul, 100%.
Well, not only that, but for the second meeting in a row, we're having a debate on legal issues between two guys who are not lawyers, and meanwhile, the guy sitting right here who could have opened his mouth with a legal opinion, we didn't turn to him and say, what is the law here? We don't want to violate the law, but we don't want to get bogged down with stuff that we don't have to do either. So why don't we ask the county attorney, what is the legal requirement?
What rules are we operating under? Did we even decide that to make a decision?
We made a motion at the first meeting, Robert's rules, because that's what you suggested.
Okay.
Well, this is an open meetings law question.
Okay.
So,
but do we operate under as a committee?
I don't know. I think we should ask the attorney.
So if you compare this body to what the legislature operates under. Robert Rules is there if there is no governing policy, and the legislature does have its own policy for committee meeting rules. So that's clear, and that's the dominant one, so long as it doesn't conflict with open meetings law. For this committee meeting, for the Charter Review Commission, I can't tell you just off the top of my head whether or not the open meeting law would govern. My assumption is that it is, yes. And if you're, I don't know what document Mr. Green is looking at, but if he's reading from a legal opinion based on, I don't know if it's from the county attorney's office.
It is.
I'm sure this issue comes up repeatedly. I'm just going based on the information that I have right now, and I could certainly follow up next time you.
And I apologize. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, it's okay. It's not.
I just think it's counterproductive to have conversations about the law when the lawyer's sitting there.
Sure. And, of course, I want to do justice to the issue at hand. It's professionally responsible for me to say I could get back to you with research. And, of course, that seems like I'm trying to avoid the issue. But, in truth, what I could tell you is, giving the information that I have, if Mr. Green is reading from an opinion from the county's attorney's office, I could assume that it's accurate and up to date, and based on and not knowing anything else about the issue, just based on his reading of what the applicable statute is, I have no reason to doubt it, and it is in plain language, and that's what gives me confidence to say that his interpretation as it is right now is correct.
But isn't there an interpretation about the term video conferencing? Maybe we're not actually video conferencing. If we just have someone listening and not participating, there's no conference.
Yeah, I would say video. That issue arose, as you know, during the pandemic. We actually had a policy, I believe, that was eventually repealed and that allowed people to appear in meetings by what's generally defined or understood as video conferencing. I would say that video conferencing, and again, this is where I have to be cautious and say I could be wrong, but it would be any sort of technology that allows someone to peer into this meeting remotely.
Well, let me ask you a question. The legislature has, and I've seen
microphone, please.
Times on the legislature front.
Microphone, please.
The legislature has a guest.
Yes.
Guest. Okay.
And they open up the Zoom, and we're listening to people make a presentation. The public isn't allowed to go on that Zoom and make comments and presentations and public gallery session when they're doing that.
Right, correct.
And the legislature is voting on legislation.
Correct.
We're not voting on legislation.
Correct.
We're sitting here discussing an interpretation.
That's a good point.
And suggestion. And then after that, when we get to our final stage, at the end of the game, we're going to have proposals.
Right.
Then I could understand that you have to have public comment. Then you have to open up the open meetings law. Then you have to do everything that line by line that we're saying now. But we're not in that stage.
That's a good distinction. I respect that distinction. In other words, you're making a distinction between the people that actually vote, that are here present, versus people who are remote that aren't voting. I think that's a good question, and that's why I don't want to give an opinion on this off the cuff. So I respect it.
But to go further,
yeah.
We're not voting. But not right now. We're
sure.
Not saying let's change item 4 over 6 and let's give the authority of the county clerk or the board of election. We're not making that recommendation.
Sure, and that's interesting. And just thinking out loud, I would look and I would expect to find in the open meetings law a distinction between the people that vote and whether they're allowed to appear remotely and vote remotely. I would assume not unless there's a policy that allows them to, versus public view, or to what extent are they allowed to quote unquote participate?
Of course, right now at this point, like Paul is here right now.
Mm-hmm.
If he discusses something, we're informal. We're making suggestions. Today we're listening to presentations to explain the charter. To listen to John give a review of the charter, and then to go line by line for us to talk on the charter. We're not voting on anything right now.
I would still, as I interpret your point, Mr. Liblick, I would suggest that you view this Charter Commission formally. In other words, I do think there is a sense of formality to the extent that we are here, we are we have a quorum, we are following those rules.
Correct.
So I would suggest that you ought to view this committee, of course, informally in tone, for sure, because there's no sense of formality where you have to, you know, be quote-unquote formal in language or in presentation. I'm sure you all know each other quite well. So in that sense, yes, it isn't formal, but in terms of the mechanics of this commission, any in my understanding is that you would make a recommendation to the legislature. That's the function of the Charter Review Commission. That, I believe, would have to come out, whatever recommendation you have, that would come out, would have to come out of a formalized meeting, and, you know,
absolutely,
there would have to be a record of votes and whatnot. So that's why I think that it is worth looking into, for me, unless there's, I hate to give the answer, let me research, but I have to let you know that I just don't want to give an opinion just off the cuff without even looking at the opens meeting law. So I would advise that if that memo is current or recent.
You have it
right in front of you.
Okay. Oh, so it's here. Okay.
Yeah. It's just a continuation.
Okay, so I have no doubt to, you know, this is from yesterday. So just to let you know, you know, if it comes from Ms. Nigro's hand, I have no reason to doubt it as it is. I would fully support it as it is.
Oh, I read it, but thank you.
But I think maybe she needs to be, maybe there needs to be further explanation.
What?
On the county attorney's office. You know, also, if you're telling us there's a committee rules from the county, we should not be following and voted for, like Ken suggested, Robert rules.
No, you could adopt
that's,
them.
That's valid. That's not valid either.
Is the public invited to this?
Of course the public. We're open meeting.
General announcement. So it's
there is. It's published.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the only question here is video, right?
Right.
Or?
It's video based on a claim from one of our members saying that we have to include people to give public comment, but we could take public comment out of the agenda till further down the road.
We have to see them.
Right.
Is that what the question is?
And Lorne is concerned that that would cost an extra staff member to run the Zoom.
Okay.
Or we, one of us could do it. Correct, Lorne?
My natural
puts up a sign saying F you or something, we have to be able to black that out. Correct?
Sort of, kind of.
There is a way to do this, which is not the best way in the eyes of the public, is if you made it so there'd be no public comment, then it would be a mute issue.
Well, we could take that out. I said
yes, but that means people who come here cannot speak.
Okay.
Well, so that is going to be up to you how you want to limit or let the public exercise their right to maybe add some information to the process.
Well, in the past charter review commissions, there were agenda items that were just for the public. And when we got to the final stage, and that, then maybe we want to add public comment.
There was always public comment.
And maybe now, in order to facilitate everyone and to be happy, we don't have to have public comment here. If we do this. Because I know Maureen can't make every meeting, you told me. And you know, I don't know what other people's schedule are, and we're all committed to this.
Do we have to change the structure? You had mentioned at the last meeting that
microphone,
you have to
please.
Something.
Microphone,
that you have to move some of the equipment?
No, we have a separate... Okay, so technically this is all doable. We have a separate piece that we would need to bring in, monitor, computer. Last month you guys discussed instead of meeting at the dais, you would all be around the table. Right. So that the camera could catch you and all that, and you'd be able to see the screen. So technically, no problem. I don't have a problem with dedicating staff to being available to monitor this, if that's the desire of the legislature and this commission.
I have a technical question. During COVID, Legislators were able to zoom in or whatever on our screen up here, and people who need accountants have been able to come in on screen and be questioned by, why do we need a different setup?
Because that is specifically set up for legislative committee meetings and the full board meeting. It's not set up for situations like this. It's a broadcast by a legislative website for legislative actions. It's not for commission or other committee actions. It's for legislative actions only.
Okay.
So what if we did it on our own? We did it that way.
Well, I would prefer that because it keeps the county out of hot water for anything that you guys might
do.
So
how do you suggest... How do you suggest we do it on our own? We'll eliminate public comment from the agenda.
I can give you the setup with a computer.
Right.
I can give you a Zoom account that Tammy would be able to go in and schedule the Zoom meeting. She'd be able to start it, stop it, et cetera, and then just have at it and walk away.
That'd be great. We could do it down there.
Correct. You would have to do it. You would have to be at the table.
That's no problem.
Yes, ma'am.
The microphones.
Well, we do have two handhelds. Tony, do you have any other option for...
Well, I'd like to...
Microphone, please.
...testing with the replacement system before we move...
There is... The system that we're utilizing is something that we put in place at the Emergency Operations Center, and it apparently can pick up voice from the back of the room with the unit up in the front, and it shouldn't be too much of an issue. The issue does arise that if there are members of the public in the gallery, they wouldn't necessarily be able to hear what is being said by the folks at the table.
Or see the screen.
The screen would be set up in front of where Bill is sitting now, facing this way. Facing this way, yes.
I'm just concerned with the microphones because for the MP3 player.
Well, there'd not be microphones down there. Two handheld, right?
It is handheld, and it's handheld, and it's part of the same system.
But we see...
Loud. It would still feed through the control room and feed her.
Okay.
And feed her recording.
We need microphones.
What if we looked at wireless table mics.
Yeah.
I mean, and we'll just take out public comment for now out of the agenda. And then when we get down the road, we add in public comment, and this way we could publish the Zoom link.
When it's time for that to occur, yes.
Yeah.
I would suggest that those times when you're going to open it up to the public, you do reach out to us so that we have somebody available to help monitor.
Yes. Totally different.
But just for the extenuating circumstances that does not allow an individual commission member to be at the meeting, to join the meeting and participate, we can, no problem.
Let's go up to the county attorney now. What do you think about all this?
The question is whether or not a member could appear remotely.
No, the question is...
That was your last point.
That is the last point, but the question is on page 2 of this memo.
Mm-hmm.
Second to last bullet point. When you're conducting using video conferencing, mm-hmm. when you read that in plain exactly what it says, it suggests that you automatically have to open it up to the public. That's how I'm interpreting that paragraph.
Is authorized.
Must be able to access and participate.
Right.
Yeah.
As soon as you use video conferencing, you invoke public participation and access.
Yeah, that's the plain language of the...
That's how I'm interpreting that, which is then when the Pandora's box potentially opens.
But I mean, if we open up... I have no problem with publicizing Zoom link. No one is commenting.
I don't know how to deal with this because it's the legislature that formed the commission. So
right.
This is a legislative function, and you're acting on behalf of the legislature. My job in utilizing county technology and county resources is ultimately to protect the members of the legislature. That's my penultimate job is from a technical perspective. So when you're going to start using technology and you're going to open it up to the public, my job to protect the legislature, management, myself, the rest of my staff, I need to have somebody here that's babysitting. I don't have a problem doing that if that's what the legislature's desire is and that's what the commission is requiring. So it really is, it's a simple fact. It's not, It's not anything that I'm objecting to. It's just
you said you could set it up on our own for us to run it.
If you're doing a member.
Right.
But if the paragraph that's in this memo is correct, that as soon as you allow video conferencing, you have to allow public access and participation, that changes the game.
Why can't we allow when we...
Because you're using county resources to do it. And my job in providing county resources is to protect the legislature that created this commission. So I have to ensure that
so
the...
we have no protection.
You have protection because I'm protecting them. You have protection. Of course you do.
I think right now it's up to the attorney to address these issues. I understand where you're coming from, Warren. And, you know, you're reading it. You're right. And, you know, Bill has another slant onto it. And I think the county attorney has to address it. And you two, Bill, going back and forth is not going to move the ball.
According to what this says, no, I don't know about open meetings law. I just know about the memo that was sent by the.
I believe the question is I believe your question, Nadia, is are we in violation because the member who's
yes.
on the committee is allowed to do that? And I think the answer is unless there's some sort of extraordinary circumstances as defined by. She defines it, the memo defines it as including disability, illness, caregiving responsibilities, or any other significant or unexpected factor or event that precludes the member's physical attendance. So we don't know what that reason is. Taking care of an elderly parent, whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So we are allowing him
yes.
to participate.
If for one of those reasons, if he asserts and represents that that's
yes,
one of the reasons,
yes.
then that's it. That's
point of information on this one. Under the law, and you'll see it with the IDA and some other ones, there may be video conferencing. There has to be a link put on the minute on the call of the meeting so people know where to go look. Once you open up a whole different ball game when you start video conferencing, and you're going to have to cross the T's and dot the I's. It's out of our hands. This is what the state has set up.
And there does need to be a resolution authorizing the use of video conferencing. That's in that bullet point at the bottom of page one as well.
Yes, you have to set up a policy. You got to have a public hearing. You got to set up what you extenuating circumstances. There's a whole policy about it. You can go on the IDA and find their policy. You can find this on any board that adopts the policy. You can do it as you're right. You can. You as a legislature could set up a policy and adopt it and cover all your commissions, all your bodies.
Again, all that it's very simple what we're asking for.
Can you speak into the microphone, please, Bill? I don't think we're picking it up well.
We are not voting. We are a fact-finding mission. And we would like to have the opportunity for everyone who's on this commission to be able to participate in our fact-finding mission. If we have a guest, let's say we call up someone from the governor's office to come, and they can't come, and they say, can we please video in? We're now going to say open meetings law prohibits you from coming and us listening to you because we're not a legislative body, we're a committee. And we're being treated right now and what we're going through, it's just mind-boggling to me. You have a reporter sitting here from a newspaper. He could be taping us and playing it to the public. You have the chair of the legislature here. Anyone could be taping this meeting. We have a member here that wants to participate. He has his back out. I says, come, we'll go on the Zoom meeting. We're not discussing if we're going to give funding somewhere or we're doing anything. We're simply discussing a charter that was written and what we could do to improve the government of Sullivan County.
So,
and what are we going around in circles here for?
So, Bill, I'm going to suggest that we don't belabor this anymore.
No.
We're going to talk to the county attorney's office
right.
with IT. I want to see if we, the legislature, can have a resolution to allow this to happen and set up rules. So
we have spent the last 41 minutes discussing this.
And Colin, that's a viable suggestion, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure that we're not running down a road we can't finish the trip on.
Yep.
One quick comment. Ken had a good point. We need name tags with our names on them because I'm not her. So if that could be, I don't facilitate that.
And I would not want to be.
No. I don't facilitate that, but we definitely need our own name tags. So.
All right, does anybody have any other questions for IT?
Anyone have
questions?
Thank you, guys. Okay.
Thank you.
Let's move on to the next item on the agenda. John Conway, our county historian, is going to give us a little report on Sullivan County before we get into the attorney's office to talk about the charter.
You want me to go up there?
Yes, please. And don't forget, John, you have to talk into the mic.
I recommend everybody to listen to our audio and see when you hear people drop out and know what you need to do when you do speak into the mic. You'll find out how effective you are or aren't.
Thank you.
I'm not sure how effective my presentation will be after sitting through that discussion, but I'll do my best. So my objective, at least as I formulated it, was not to delve into the charter, but what I wanted to do is to provide a little background as to how we got to the current form of government that we have in the county and what the impetus was in that progression from day one. So I think at the risk of really getting into some mundane points, I want to make sure that everyone realizes how this whole thing started. So the county is formed in 1809. And by the way, it had to be approved by the state legislature, and it took a few attempts for that to happen. It wasn't something that was automatic. And it wasn't really until the Newburgh-Eschecton Turnpike was constructed and there was a way to get people in and out of the county that the state agreed that the county should be formed. So in March of 1809, Sullivan County comes into existence for the first time. And like other counties at the time, it was governed by a board of supervisors. And I'm not sure how many of you know, but when the county was formed, there were five towns. Geographically, the boundaries of the county were roughly the same as they are now. It didn't change much, but there were only five towns in the county: Mamikaning, Lumberland, Thompson, Liberty, and Neversink. Within the first year of the county's existence, there were two towns added almost immediately. Bethel and Rockland are formed from the existing towns. So the boundaries of the county don't change, but the number of towns do. And at that point in time, each of the supervisors who governed their individual towns also sat on a board of supervisors that governed the county, and each one had a single vote. But from the very beginning, the weaknesses of that system became very apparent, although perhaps no one was really paying any attention. The problem with the Board of Supervisors, as it turns out, is that, you know, the old saying, no man can serve two masters. So each supervisor's primary responsibility was to do what was best for their town. And that almost always precluded them from doing what was best for the county. And from the very beginning, this is the weakness of the Board of Supervisors. For example, first order of business that comes before the Board of Supervisors is to choose a county seat. Each one of the supervisors had their own agenda, had their own preference. It wasn't what's best for the county. And what turns out obviously to be the best for the county was to have the county seat located on the only improved road that ran through the county at the time, which was the Newburgh-Coshocton Turnpike. Monticello was the logical choice. But there wasn't universal acceptance of that. Liberty thought that they should be the county seat. There was some opinion that Thompsonville, believe it or not, should be the county seat. So it took a year and a half before the Board of Supervisors could make a decision. And it really took the intervention of the governor in order to get the Board of Supervisors to decide where to locate the county seat. Some of you may be aware of this story that goes along, and I'm just going to take a second to retell it. But the governor says, you know, you guys can't come to a decision, so I'll make the decision. I'm going to appoint a state legislative committee. Each one of the contenders from the county will come up and make their case. The legislative committee will recommend to me where the county seat will be, and I'll declare the county seat. And so the Monticello folks go up, led by Samuel Jones, who was probably the shrewdest of all of the politicians in the county at the time. He pleads the case that Monticello should be the county seat, probably overdoes it a bit. You know, all the smart and socially prominent people live in Monticello, et cetera, et cetera. But the real crux of it was that Monticello is located on the Newburgh-Coshocton Turnpike, and by right should be the county seat. The folks from Liberty make the trip to Albany, and keep in mind now that this is not a two-hour trip back in 1809. You know, it's quite a journey from Sullivan County to Albany. So the folks from Liberty on the way up, Samuel Jones and the Monticello delegations on the way back, and they meet up on the road, and Jones tells them, you might as well turn around and go home, because the matter's already been decided. We're the county seat, which wasn't true. But the Liberty people turned around and went home, never presented their case. Monticello is declared the county seat. Didn't sit well with the Board of Supervisors. And they would not appropriate the money to build a courthouse and a clerk's office until, again, the governor has to get involved and force the issue. Things go along fairly smoothly from that point on until 1844, January of 1844, the county buildings in Monticello are destroyed in a fire. And now the Board of Supervisors, and keep in mind this is 35 years later, the county's changed drastically over that time, and no members of the board were seated in 1809, so it's not like there were members who had firsthand knowledge of what happened, but they decide, you know, this gives us a perfect opportunity to revisit the issue of where the county seat should be. We have to rebuild the buildings anyway. Why do it in Monticello? Maybe they should be somewhere else. And so the issue is reopened, and once again, the weakness of the Board of Supervisors' form of government shows itself. There's jockeying for the county seat. So not just Monticello and Liberty now, but Forestburg thinks they should be the county seat. Fallsburg, which didn't, and by the way, Forestburg didn't exist in 1809. Fallsburg didn't exist in 1809, but they think they should be the county seat. That's really the industrial hub of the county. And so there's this multi-fronted battle for the county seat. And again, it drags on, it drags on, it drags on. It's only because of a political deal that's made with the Forestburg supervisor, who knows that since he really doesn't have a realistic chance of being the county seat, it's better for him if it's in Monticello than if it's in Liberty or Fallsburg or Berryville. And so he makes a deal, and Monticello is able to retain the county seat. But again, it takes months and months before the money's appropriated to rebuild the courthouse. We see this happening again and again and again as we move forward with things like the community college, which is in our lifetime. The idea of a community college was kicked around because they couldn't decide on a seat. Why? Because each one of the supervisors wanted what was best for their town, not necessarily what was best for the county. Same thing happens when the airport is constructed. And most visibly when there's a proposal to build a convention center. When the hotels began to struggle, which by the way is 1958, There are proposals to build a convention center that the county would own and operate, and the hotels could utilize for conventions. It doesn't get done because the various towns, and particularly the towns that are controlled by the hotel interests, they don't want the convention center. When things get desperate as we move into the 1960s, and it's obvious that the golden age of tourism here has ended, and now we're desperate for a convention center, they once again open the issue, and they kick the can down the road until finally they go to bid on a convention center, and the price has skyrocketed beyond their affordability. So this is another instance where the Board of Supervisors fails. And there are numerous instances where that's the case. There's also an issue with the fact that each one of the supervisors on the board has a single vote. And what happens as the county begins to take a different shape, population shifts. You know, in the early days, the population of the county was distributed much differently. So you had a large pocket of population along the river, because that was an important asset in the county. You had a large pocket of population on the other side of the Shongum Range, Bloomingburg, Wurtsboro area was heavily populated. It's not until later when transportation changes, you know, the D&H Canal goes out, the railroad comes in, that population shift. And now we see populations concentrated more in the center of the county, Monticello, Liberty, Fallsburg. And what happens with the Board of Supervisors is that because it's an 8-7 vote in order to carry a majority, eight towns could carry an issue while representing only 20% of the county's population. So if those eight towns were the smallest towns, seven towns representing 80% of the town's population could not carry an issue. And in fact, three towns, Monticello, Liberty, and Fallsburg, at that point in time, represented 80% of the county's population. They couldn't get anything done on their own, even though they represent 80%. So, we get into the 1960s, and a gentleman by the name of Kurt Shilbury decides to sue the Board of Supervisors to force that issue. He said, that's unconstitutional, that so many people are disenfranchised. And so it goes to the state Supreme Court. And they decide that that is unconstitutional to have each supervisor have a single vote because it disenfranchises a large number of citizens. And that's where weighted voting comes in 1967. And weighted voting corrects that issue, but it does not solve the problem of supervisors' divided loyalties. Now, with weighted voting, it's not perfect. And what, as Bill has often referenced, what develops is that three towns, Monticello, Liberty, and Fallsburg, can pretty much control through their weighted votes. And I saw this happen many, many times, and I'm sure some of you are old enough to remember those days, that they could push through pretty much whatever they wanted. And the problem with that was that they were contiguous. They were not only the largest towns, they were contiguous towns. And so everyone living on the fringes of the county, whether it was in Grahamsville or Wurtsboro or Barryville, they're basically disenfranchised. So the weighted voting solved the problem, but it created additional problems as well. So weighted voting was not a perfect solution either. And so periodically throughout this time that the Board of Supervisors was in power, people would propose the notion that we needed to revise the county charter. We needed to abandon the Board of Supervisors. We needed to go to a legislative form of government. We needed to have a county executive, or at the very least a county administrator. because in the early days there was no administrative state here. There was no administrative form of government. The Board of Supervisors and the clerk basically carried out all the functions. And so there are debates periodically, usually when something goes wrong in the county. A good example is when the Woodstock Festival takes place, which is viewed, unlike today, at that time was viewed as a complete disaster, something that, you know, we barely survived. And, you know, the common notion throughout the county was never again. And so the Board of Supervisors allowed that to happen. So obviously there must be a flaw in that system of government, and these charter debates begin anew after Woodstock in 1969, and we go into 1970, and they're back and forth. And at this point in time, the hotels now, which are struggling, those that are left are really struggling financially, they are in favor of a new form of government. They need to see some change happen. They're hoping that someone's going to bail them out. And so we have these charter debates that go on throughout the county. And what happens is that we have basically teams that go throughout the county debating whether or not we should change the form of government. So why the legislative form of government as opposed to the Board of Supervisors? Well, if you think about the way the founders of the nation created the government, our national government. The idea came of the bicameral legislature came out of the question of if the people are represented, then how do the states get represented and vice versa. And so the notion of the bicameral legislature was designed to solve that issue. So here in the county, we had the towns being represented by the supervisors on the board. People were not being represented necessarily. The county cause, the people who make up the county, were not necessarily being thought of except as an afterthought to what would benefit the individual towns. So the way the founders got around that, they created the Senate, which at in the initial stages was chosen by the senators, by the way. Each state had equal representation, like the Board of Supervisors. But those senators were chosen by the state legislature. So the states were represented by the senators. The House of Representatives was to represent the people. They don't represent a state or a county or any entity except for the people in their district. And that's how the legislature is supposed to function on the county level, as opposed to the Board of Supervisors. So for many years, I'll be very frank, I really believed that although it was probably financially impossible to do, that a bicameral form of legislature would be the best way to govern the county. County executive, a Board of Supervisors, and a county legislature. The Board of Supervisors would represent the towns, the legislature would represent the people, and the county executive would sort of referee between the two, just like we have on the federal level. In more recent years, I've realized that that's probably flawed in another way. And if you study the founders and their intention in creating that bicameral form of legislature, one of the primary reasons for doing that was the House of Representatives, a two-year term, many, many representatives who are very close to the people because they represent only a few, especially in the early days. They had very few people in their districts, and there was quick turnover, but they were very responsive to the people. So the danger in that was that there would be passion ruling the government. The people's passion would be directly translated to political action. The Senate was designed much differently. Six-year terms, representing a large number of people, removed from the individual passions of the population, representing only the state. So it was a much more deliberative body. And that was to slow things down so that the passion didn't rule. but reason would rule. So on a local government level, that's a bad system. You need to be reactive much more. You need to be much more sensitive to the needs of the people and react much quicker. So bicameral form doesn't work. The legislative form of government is viewed as the best for that very reason, because the legislators are supposed to be in touch with the people. They do not represent a region of the county. They're supposed to represent only the people in their district. The argument that you hear is that, well, you know, you end up with bad people. The same argument you hear against the county executive. What if you get a bad person? Well, you know what? You're going to get a bad person sooner or later, whatever the office is. And you're going to have to work around that. The problem, the bigger problem is when you have a system that doesn't allow good people to do their jobs. And the Board of Supervisors was that kind of a system. The legislature, when it functions the way it does, and unfortunately it doesn't always function that way, because there is no mechanism for educating the legislator when he's elected, or she, in the way they are supposed to work, the way they're supposed to function. So if they come in with the notion that they're representing their town, and there are legislators who have done that and continue to do that, and by the way, this is not about any individual from 1809 to today, it's about systems. The system only works when people understand how it is supposed to work. So we need to have an educational process for all new legislators. They have to be in touch with the people in order for the legislature to work. That's how the charter was designed, and I'm not going to get into the ins and outs of the charter. I think we have a lawyer here. And by the way, I firmly believe that when you have a lawyer sitting in your presence, legal opinion should come from him, regardless of what the issue is. Not waste 45 minutes, two meetings in a row, debating legal issues when we have a lawyer in our presence. Let's turn to the lawyer for the legal opinion. That's just my point of view. So the legislature was created in order to overcome the flaws of the Board of Supervisors. Unfortunately, there are flaws with the legislative form of government we have discovered, and I don't think anyone would debate that. It's not a perfect form of government. And the notion of the county executive, which, again, dates back to the 1960s, this is not a new thing, is viewed as a solution to that. And I think that's an issue that we need to debate here as a commission. So I will answer any questions if anyone has them. I also printed out a couple of things that I had written over the years on this. I'll just leave them here if anyone's interested.
Not mandatory reading. Jerry, does
anyone have any questions?
Nope.
I never know what to think when people don't have questions.
I don't know.
Was it that bad? Or
you explained it very well.
It was excellent.
It was second oldest town in the county.
You explained it very well, John.
Yes, Kenneth.
I'd like to suggest if you got that in digital form, you forward it on to the secretary so it can be part of the minutes.
I don't have my presentation in digital form, and I guess I could make those in digital form, but yeah, I can do that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I think we just need a copy of each, and we'll just attach it to the minutes.
Well, it has to be put in.
That's up to you.
As long as it's on the website. Along with the minutes.
I'm sure it'll be on the website if it's along with the minutes. We don't want to do anything that's not legal.
No, I just want to, it's
open meetings law. That's open meeting. We're going to propose. We have a resolution that we adopt this in 1 minute.
It has to do with being informative.
It's seconded. Does everyone
say background information. It's not. There's nothing.
I understand that, but being that we're going to put it on background information,
we voted on it,
and now it could go on
or not. Well, if there's no questions, I thank you for your attention, and
I look forward to hearing more about that. Thank you very much. Paul is still there.
That's interesting. I learned a lot.
Now we're going to move on to the county attorney's office to give us a little brief synopsis on the county charter and the code.
Spend hours.
So if it's okay, Is there any opposition to me speaking from here? Or?
I have none. Ken, do you have opposition?
I don't care where he speaks from.
Okay.
As long as you speak in the mic.
Okay, I will.
That's right.
So I was asked to talk about the county charter and the code.
You could also identify yourself.
Yes. My name is Khalid Bashjalish. I am the deputy county attorney for the county attorney's office. What I want to start with, and just to reiterate, I was asked to speak about the charter and the code and just to talk about the purpose by the chairwoman of the charter and the code. And I could take questions and answer your questions to the extent that I can about the function and purpose of both, and comparing other forms of government. So what's a nice segue into following Mr. Conway's presentation is to read from the county charter. And what's interesting is when Chairwoman Reich asked me to think about, you know, the purpose of the charter, I looked it up, and it has its stated purpose right there on the second clause, on the second title. And I want to read that because it does fit nicely with Mr. Conway's presentation. It states that it is the legislative intent of this charter to provide for the orderly government and management of the County of Sullivan. It is also the intent of this charter to provide for a government that is efficient, effective, accountable, inclusive, open, and environmentally and fiscally responsible. Consistent with this intent, the charter allocates duties and responsibilities in the county government, and it goes into a list of its overall objectives. But what I like about it is that it does really reflect and confirm what Mr. Conway was saying, because not having been there when they formed this charter, you could reasonably say that as a fact that there was a prior issue with efficiency, effective efficiency, accountability, a sense of inclusiveness and openness. And that's so much to them that that's why they put it in there in the first, in the second clause of the charter. I suggest that you think of the charter as the county's constitution. It does define the function of the legislature. It defines the form of government, being, as you all know, that it is a legislative form of government, and it lists the powers and duties. Although not all are expressly stated, they are listed in the charter, as well as the county manager. So if that's the constitution in terms of the broader structure, overall powers, then the code, the function of the code is to list and express the day-to-day operations. In other words, how certain departments are formed, the function of those departments, and what powers they have to the extent that they have any. So that's the global distinction between the charter and the code in terms of function and purpose. In terms of forms of government, obviously you have the historic one, the Board of Supervisors, and I believe there are some still current existing in the state of New York of the 62 counties. I believe a few. It's the minority, but there are a few that still operate under that. It's certainly not my position to advocate one or the other. There are simply, and I really appreciate what Mr. Conway said, there are pros and cons to any form of government, no matter what you do. There are pros and cons to Board of Supervisors, legislative form of government, and county executive form of government. All have their pros and cons. It does, I think, reflect the interest of the type of population that's there. I don't know. It'd be interesting to think about whether or not a legislative form of government would serve the residents of Nassau County or Westchester County. That's a tough analysis to make, given that we don't live there or know its history, as well as we do here in Sullivan County. So those are the overall functions of it. I'd say that if you think of the charter as a constitution and the code as the day-to-day operations, that's the best way to make that distinction.
I have one question.
Yeah.
Maybe you can get us this information.
Sure.
From the last Charter Review Commission to the former legislature, there were some changes made to the codes. Is there a way we can get a copy of what changes were made in the last several years of the codes? There were permissive referendums, and there were, I know there were dramatic changes in certain areas.
Yep.
And I think that's something that we as a Charter Review Commission has to review if we think some of those changes were appropriate or not.
Does that come under our mission? I'm just curious.
I think we have to review what was changed from the past Charter Review Commission and then make recommendations if we determine if that was appropriate changes. I would like to know what changes were made.
You want to say, I believe the last commission was around
10 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say 2016.
Yes. But not this legislative body.
I know the previous one.
The former legislative body 4 years ago.
Right.
6 years ago, there were many changes to the codes. And we really have to get a grasp on what those changes were. I know one was the chair of the legislature being able to put themselves on the committee. And there were many other changes. And I think that we need to know what those changes were.
Okay. I'll see
and
if I
don't
I can
think the current legislature is familiarized with what those changes were either.
Okay, if the county attorney's office has a copy of that, we can certainly look into that. And maybe by, I think, just thinking off the top of my head, when we do have local laws passed, that's published and that's enumerated.
Correct.
In terms of code, though, I don't know if that's different, but that's, I'll certainly look into
they
that.
They did go through permissive referendums. They had to.
If you got enough signatures, you could force it.
Right. I understand that, but they these weren't signatures.
Right. They did not.
Permissive referendum.
But you're making the point that it should be easy to find.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It should be easy to find. I just think that we, as the Charter Review Commission, as what was changed from the codes from the previous Charter Review Commission.
Yeah. So I think that I don't expect to find a list, codes that were changed, but, when you look at the documents and you just simply go one by one and enumerate what they, list what they are, we could do it that way.
Yeah.
So if there's a file, that's simply easy enough.
I mean, it's just important that we know what was changed from the last commission. We made recommendations for just to familiarize yourself.
Sure.
To have staggered terms, which Cheryl McCausland worked on with us, and then it was presented to the legislature, and they just were going to do it, and then the governor changed the terms of office, and it never happened.
But you want to know specifically what changes were made to the code?
I'm telling you what we recommended.
Oh, sure, sure.
Then we recommended the sheriff's patrol be put in the charter, which it never was. That was passed. And then we also recommended the county executive, which was never passed by the legislature. But after our report, there were the meetings with the other chair of the legislature where there were codes that were changed. And there were several items, and it's not what the former Charter Review worked on, so we should at least know what they were and know why it was changed.
Okay. Okay, it'll be interesting to know. The why is always tough, or in other words, the intent.
Right, but at least to see why.
At least
From seeing the change, we could determine the why.
Sure.
A question I have is, the legislature changed the code. What's the process for that?
Legislature does that.
I know,
the wrong
process.
It's a permissive referendum that has to be published.
Could you explain what that is? I don't want that is.
Prior to the legislative meeting, there would be two public hearings if anyone came to object.
So there would be hearings then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ken would come to object to the changes of the codes. Why? I don't know why he doesn't remember, because you did. And then after that, then that would become law.
Okay, thank you.
Well, what happened when they changed the code, the government became less transparent. People who used to come to committee meetings that are underneath the commissioners, more of them spoke and told everybody what was going on. And when they changed the code, we didn't see those people anymore.
Correct.
So they did not have a chance to interact with the legislature and give them a heads up or tell them what they were doing. It all went, got funneled through the commission.
Department heads were no longer allowed to come to the legislature and to speak before the legislature.
It's counterproductive.
And give reports. That was one of the changes.
Yeah.
The other was being the chair being on committees. Okay. So there were a lot of changes that were done.
Okay.
And I think we should examine it and make recommendations if we should revert back.
And the time period you're discussing is 2020.
What legislative session are we in now? We're 2026, 24.
This is 2020.
So 22.
This is 2024, and there was 2020 when Rob took over.
Yeah, it's 2020.
2020
to 2024.
The class of 2020, I call it. Yes. The class of 2024.
The class of 2020. Between 2020 and 2024, there were changes made. I don't believe your legislative made any changes to the codes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, and just to compliment your point about permissive referendum, I believe that when you want to change the form of government, that's mandatory referendum.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. But that's they held the hearings, and that's how they passed it. Absolutely.
Okay. So I hope I don't know to what extent that illuminated your understanding of the code or whatnot. But if there's anything to point out, it's to think of the charter as the constitution of the county.
The constitution and the code is the operation.
Yes.
And how it operates, and I think that's important to know the distinction.
Yes.
And it's something that we have to investigate as a charter review commission. Mm-hmm. Anything else you think you should add that we should know?
No, I really appreciate Mr. Conway's framing of it, that there's a pros and cons to any form of government, and it's up to the body, the public body, and the legislators to decide what's in the best interest of the county, because no one else is in a better position to make that assessment.
Correct. I agree. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So now we can move on to the charter.
Let me just I would like to add one point, if you don't mind. I probably used up all my time, but one of the criticisms that we often heard about the weighted voting system was that, so let's say, Bill, you represent Liberty and you have, I don't know, 350 weighted votes, but you only vote once. So the argument would frequently be made that not everybody in the town of Liberty feels the same way about a given issue, and yet you're voting one time for 350 times, and that's not fair. But in reality, that's the way representative forms of government work. You don't necessarily agree with the decision that your representative makes. You've elected him to make those decisions, so he's not necessarily going to represent your personal opinion every single time, and that's how weighted voting worked as well. So, there were always complaints and criticisms about the systems that were not necessarily valid, and I think we have the same kind of situation today with the legislature. A lot of the criticisms, they're just sort of knee-jerk reactions that really are not, they're not realistic, they're not valid, they're not accurate. Or maybe they're just happening because of poor execution on the part of the legislature. It's not a flaw in the form of government per se. That was the only
good point. Very good point. Any other questions? Anything? Move on? Okay. Does everyone have the charter with them? We should begin. So let's start with the title.
And so we're talking about C?
Yes. Okay. C-100.
Bill, I know you may get angry with me. But please talk into the mic because I can't.
I'm.
Wait, Bill. I cannot hear you coming out of the speakers.
No, someone not being able to hear me come out of the speakers. I don't know. Do you hear me now? Ken?
You work for Verizon?
No, I don't. But do you hear me? Definitely not Spectrum, because
it's better. But if you cannot hear yourself coming out of the speaker, then you're really not speaking well into the mic.
Seeing everyone thinks I speak too loudly. So now I know that I definitely do speak softly, and it's everyone has a hearing problem, right, Ken?
I do.
Okay. So let's start with the title. Do we want to read this out loud to go, like each person could read a little?
No.
How do we want to do this?
You can do it.
Oh, sure. Of course we'll read.
Can you bring my glass?
Okay. So we're looking at the charter. Everyone has a copy, correct?
Yeah, three times.
The charter with all subsequent amendments here shall constitute the form of government for the County of Sullivan and shall be known and may be cited as the Sullivan County Charter. The purpose. It is the legislative intent. We should have the secretary do this, right? No, I'm kidding. It is the legislative... why don't we just read this to ourselves and then... let's read the whole page, okay? I don't think we have to do it that way. Nadia, would you like to read it?
You don't have to stay.
Would I like to read it?
For us?
No,
I'm reading water at school, but no, I'm going home.
I think the best thing is we just read it. We read it page by page.
No, we don't. I don't think we're going to get into a fist fight anymore.
Okay. thank you for letting me comment.
Thank you for coming. Yeah. Enjoy your evening.
Thank you, Nadia.
Yes, Ken.
Just read a page. We'll take one page out.
Yes, we'll take one
and
page.
And we'll have anybody questions or comments.
Correct. That's exactly
that'll
what
work
going
the best.
So let's read the first page. Do you need a copy?
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Do you have an extra copy?
I don't have one. Do you have one?
I thought I picked it up, but I left it in the car.
I only have one copy.
When I grabbed my papers, I left it.
Oh, okay.
That's all right. I'll be good.
Then we'll read it out loud, John, if you'd like. John, we'll read it out loud.
Okay.
It is a legislative intent of this charter to provide for orderly government and management of the County of Sullivan. It is also the intent of this charter to provide for a government that is efficient, effective, and accountable, inclusive, open, environmentally, and fiscally responsible. Consistent with this intent, this charter allocates duties and responsibilities in county government. This charter will A. secure all possible home rule. B. separate legislative and administrative functions in county government. C. increase communication with the public concerning management of the county and encourage public participation in county governance. D. reduce conflicts and the potential for conflicts between various branches and departments of government and between government employees and the private sector. E. encourage flexibility in the organizational structures of county government. C1.02, continued status and powers. The County of Sullivan shall continue to be a municipal corporation and shall have all the powers and perform all the duties now, hereafter, conferred and imposed upon by this charter or applicable New York State law. Together with all rights, privileges, functions, and powers necessarily implied or incidental thereof. C-103, effect on state laws. Any New York State law which is inconsistent with this charter shall be superseded by the provisions hereof, and to the extent of its inconsistency, except where supersession is restricted by state law. C1.04, existing legislative continued, except to the extent to which they may be inconsistent with the provisions of this charter, all existing laws, resolutions, rules, and regulations, herefore adopted, shall continue in full force and effect until amended, superseded, or repealed as provided herein. C1.05, revision of the charter. A. Within 2 years after the enactment of this charter, the county legislature
shall appoint a charter review commission composed of qualified electors of Sullivan County and representing various segments of the community to review the implementation of the charter and purpose amendments. Any comments? Ken?
No, they could have it more often. There's no number there. That's the only thing.
Okay. Let's go on. C, 105, County, Sullivan County Code. If required, additional charter review commissions composed of qualified county electors chosen by the county legislature and representing various segments of the community shall be appointed at least once every 10 years thereafter to review and propose revisions to the charter if required. Nothing in this section shall be construed to mean that the county legislature, by a majority of votes, may not propose provisions for amendment of this charter for public referendum at any general or special election in the county of Sullivan. Legislative option. After initial passage of the charter law by the electorate, the Board of Supervisors shall appropriate the necessary monies and proceed to complete a plan of a legislative form of government, including but not limited to setting up legislative districts with defined boundaries, establishing the salaries of the legislators, and all other legal requirements in order to provide the electorate of Sullivan County with a clear and precise picture of how a proposed legislative form of government will affect them. An amendment to this charter law, given the electorate the option of voting for such legislative form or retaining the Board of Supervisors system, shall be placed on the ballot no later than November 1994. Yes, Maureen.
So, why 10 years?
Can't hear you.
Can't hear you.
I'm sorry.
Please speak into the mic.
Why 10 years? In 10 years, there are almost three elections for legislature, right?
Mm-hmm.
So several code changes potentially, right? And other changes in terms of elected officials. So is there a review every few years?
No.
Okay.
There is constant review, if we read this properly. There's constant review of the charter by the legislators. And they at any time could make motions to change the codes, which they've have done, which I mentioned
which is what
before.
You for.
And they could also make motions to change parts of the charter. But that would all have to go through a permissive referendum.
Okay.
So the form of government, though, when it was set up, that every 10 years there must be a review. This is the third charter review commission that the County of Sullivan has held. Yes, Ken?
There's nothing in that paragraph that prohibits them from calling a charter review commission at any time before that. They must do it within 10 years or sooner.
Okay.
There must be a 10-year period.
Okay. I think it should be written that it has to be done within the 10 years. When was the last time we did this?
10 years ago.
10?
Yeah.
You sure?
Mm-hmm. I was on it. Ken was on it.
On it?
At least once every 10 years.
What year was it?
I don't remember.
26 we ended. 2016? Something like 2016.
That was a test. It just takes them a long time to get us in place. And I think they should start early enough. And I don't think it should be 10 years. A lot has changed since 2016, especially in our county.
The problem is, and I agree with you.
And maybe it should say every 5 years.
If we want to make that recommendation that there should be a charter review commission every 5 years, it's difficult enough to put together every 10 years a charter review commission.
This legislature could have put the commission together within the first year of taking office.
It shouldn't be easy to change the charter.
It shouldn't be that difficult.
The charter should be difficult to change.
Right.
Correct.
The code is a different thing. That's the everyday thing. That can be changed easily.
But there's nothing.
The charter should have a certain sacrosanct status, I think. It should be hard to change it. Not impossible, but it shouldn't happen on whim.
Right.
So I think the 10-year thing, it doesn't preclude the legislature from making changes at any time, as we said, but they have to go through the process. But I don't think we need to make it easier to change the charter.
And I wasn't suggesting the 10 years, but what you brought up regarding the codes, I think there should be some review of the codes and what impact it had. If our role is to look at efficiency and effectiveness,
well, we are reviewing the code.
Well, actually,
but it's 10 years.
I don't think it's our role to review the code, is it?
Right. If you read the paragraph, you're right.
Okay.
Well, ours is a charter. It has nothing in there about code,
except codes were changed, and we still review them.
I think that's
the legislature's purview.
Okay. Let's not debate that right now.
Yeah, you know? I don't think we should.
Let's move on. We can always come back to it.
Yeah.
I will suggest under membership is basically based upon, I know it's two paragraphs ahead, that we just dispense with that. That's based upon the census, and that's the numbers they came. We can't change that.
Okay. So
county, you can go to C2, you can proceed with.
Well, we have the county legislature shall be the elected governing body of the county and shall, when lawfully convened, constitute the legislative, appropriating government, governing, and policy-making body of the County of Sullivan. Membership, we have the membership of all the towns.
Right.
And what their populations are.
Yeah, that's based on the last census.
So we don't.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Because I'm a little confused. There's the charter and there's the codes. Who created the codes?
The charter comes first, the code comes after.
But who created the codes?
The legislature.
They create their own codes?
Right.
From the charter?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Well, not necessarily, because a lot of the codes were in place, and it says explicitly in the charter that any code that's already in place is not superseded by the charter, so they remain in place. So the legislature did not necessarily make all the code.
Yeah. Some of them go back to to our infamous supervisors.
But they could change the code. They certainly have that power to change the code.
Yes, they do.
Now I think we're at a point here that I'm not advocating by any means, but this is a point that you just read about membership that has come up as a possible point of discussion. And I know there are members of the commission that believe that the nine legislators elected from single legislative districts should be revisited. I know Ken talked about adding legislators. I know there are people who think we have too many legislators. So I think that if we don't need to do it right this minute, at some point that might be a point that needs to be discussed. Is nine the right number? I mean, I happen to think that's a good number, but I know there are others who think otherwise, and I'm certainly willing to listen to the rationale.
I think we should add that down to discussion.
And they're also part-time, right? They're part-time. They're not full-time.
Well, they would create a different, you know, extra salaries and extra, I guess we do the districts.
That's another, we haven't gotten to that part yet.
No, I know, we're just talking about the membership.
Ken, you got an opinion on how many legislatures there should be? I'd like to hear your opinion. You have an opinion on how many legislatures there should be?
I figure we should go to 11, and by doing that, I think we could, like the village of Monticello could maybe have one legislator instead of maybe three or four. Same with Liberty. It would give the more rural areas more of an input. It would give the political process in both parties who select the candidates a better handle on finding candidates that suit their district. That's the only reason why. I just think that...
No, thank you. Appreciate it.
Can I ask a question? The county's in a financial budget crisis. Where would the additional funds come from?
Life still goes on. You know, that's something that you just have to deal with. They just have to figure out what they won't have, what bells and whistles they'll forget about. I mean, it's something we need to explore.
Yeah, that's
I could
that's
do more research
on at some point.
Okay?
Okay, no, let's put that on as a... Yes.
I'd also like to have a point of discussion on the next item, which is the...
powers and duties?
The redistricting and so on. So
let's add that in also. That's every 10 years through the census they do that. But
yeah, but here's what I'd like to see. And again, I don't think this is the time to get into the specifics.
But have a working list.
I think there should be a provision that the legislature should be required to present to the public a minimum of 3 redistricting options, if that's practicable. The last time we redistricted, as you recall, there was one proposal.
Now there were 3 maps.
But then the time before there was one.
Yeah, there were 3
and
maps.
And so that's the only, we were told, and I was one of only 3 people to come and speak against, we were told that this is the only mathematical possible way to do it, which is totally untrue, but that shouldn't be allowed. There should be multiple choices for the people to speak about. I mean, the legislature is still going to have the final say, but the public has the right to view other options and to speak about them, to have an opinion about them at the public hearings. And this notion that the legislature can control that, that's the very definition of gerrymandering. So I think we just need to address that.
I agree with you.
There should be a requirement that there's multiple options.
Okay, I agree with you, and that would probably be someplace like under A, under membership A.
Well, no, I think it's on B right here where they list the districts and the population, and that's what brought it to my mind.
Right, but someplace maybe back in there, a suggested procedure. We know they don't have to adopt our recommendation.
Well, that goes
well. That's whatever. Anything
that's been proven over and over again.
Okay, but I think what you want to do is probably put it in the beginning process.
Yes, yes, yes. You go ahead.
I mean, just listening to the discussion on increasing, decreasing number of legislatures. I guess it seems to be a long shot. But I guess my question would be, what improvements would we expect to achieve if we increase the number, because we're deluding people? And how would we know if it worked? I mean, what would we take as a sign that, yeah, it actually was a good idea to go from 9 to 11 or 9 to 7?
Well, in 10 years, you would revise it if you didn't like how it worked out.
There's one point I forgot to mention.
To the microphone.
I'm sorry, what?
There's one point I forgot to mention. Presently, most of your committees are made up with 5 people, and I read something that opens meetings. Well, technically, all the committees are the legislature, because if the 5 agree, it should happen. And if you had 11, you could still have 5, but it would not be a majority of the legislature on the committee. But something needs to be looked on from another point, from a legal point of view.
So in other words, you're saying that anything that passes a committee is going to be automatically passed by the
committee? I read something under the open meetings law about the majority. Say you have a committee meeting, and this would be a case where, let's use the 11, and somebody else joined a discussion from the legislature, that automatically changes it to a different form, a different majority vote. Technically, legislators who are not on a committee are not supposed to be interacting with the rest of it, because the way the open meetings law has interpreted it. So it's something that needs to be looked into.
I see.
Okay?
You could make the committees 4.
You can make the committees 4, then you wind up with a tie vote. You also reduce the amount of input, possibly, in discussion. You know, there's advantages and disadvantages to numbers present. But just something to think about, something we need to look into. an address.
Can I ask you a question? You mentioned Marcel and Larry possibly having their own. Do you feel they're not represented, or do you feel that their interest is so specific, needs specific representation?
That's a great point. I think that there's a tendency sometimes, if you got three or four people representing the same area, you know, it's just to try to, my desire is to try to give more influence to the more rural parts of our area, which is also reflected in our philosophy and how we live and what we like about our county, which urbanites not always catch on to, especially when you have influxes.
I'm from Delaware, so I agree with you.
Okay. So with that point, I mean, we're doing the comprehensive plan in the town of Bethel right now, and we had a large discussion or several discussions about the population, and given the population, how it increases threefold, I mean, how could, and when you look at voting, and I hate to bring in voting as well, but how that changes the complexity within this whole charter. So how do we adequately or appropriately account for the population?
Well, the legislature basically did these maps. I mean, look, and I'll just say it. A lot of, and Ken knows this is the fact, and I'm sure others know the fact. These legislative districts were originally designed with, you could say, all the census data you want and every you want, is to get certain populations that vote, that are in here year-round, to be able to vote and hopefully vote, they thought, for certain legislators. And Monticello was split up so, in a way, where I think there's four legislators that represent Monticello right now. When in the past there was two legislators. I mean, districts were done so, if you look at Bethel, it'll extend to Swan Lake into parts of Jeffersonville to include certain communities and developments. At the end of the day, does it mean that that's how a population is going to vote? You don't know. But I will tell you, Joe Perillo's district, it was cut in a certain way. Where Ira Steingart, when he was there, it went from him representing one street, taking away a community and giving another community to someone else. I mean, it was pinpoint of how these maps were drawn. And I mean, it's a hidden elephant that we could talk about, but it's something that we know that happened. And there were challenges, just like congressional districts mm-hmm. in the state of New York. They're making right. amendments. You see how they were playing across the country with congressional maps. So the maps that are in Sullivan County are 10 years now. And you have to wait to the next census to change those maps. Yes, Ken.
The other thing is, too, and this is why I would like to get ahead of the game by going to legislators, because in the next 10 years, we don't know what the population is going to be. And if we add the two additional legislators, we start to have more input, and, you know, we got a smaller base to go and talk to. And then we'll be, 4 years will be the census, so in 6 years, we'll be doing the map.
Come here.
I agree with some of that. Oh, I'm the one who can't hear. So
I didn't hear what you said.
The resident, it says you must be a resident. I think you should have, you must be a resident for a period of time. If we're going to change anything, we should definitely not have people moving into or coming up here and saying, I want to run. They have to be a resident of...
The part of that is that the state election law sets that guideline of how who can vote and where they can reside, if they can have secondary residences, and if they can run for office.
I understand that, but you cannot... there's a time limit that you have. We could state there's a time limit that you should live in the
I don't
area.
Think
election law.
Because you can run for Congress and not be in the area.
No.
And Mark Molinaro did that.
Yep.
I don't think that's the purview of the charter, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's not. It's a state.
It's like property tax. The charter can't define who's tax exempt, and it's right. A state. That's a state right. Thing. So
it's a state that has to be primary residence?
No. The state has an odd definition.
I'm just curious. It's a primary
residency and also tax
state
exemption.
State, so then Board of Elections, they define the law. The state legislature.
Yeah, the state means primary resident. Resident means you happen to live there part-time. Primary means that's your full-time.
Say that again?
Primary resident would be that be your full-time legal. That way you can't vote in two different states. Some people did. So it's your primary resident.
But the charter says just resident.
Yes.
I don't think you can define primary resident to non-primary resident.
Well, it is defined in federal level, yes.
Yes, federal. Yeah.
But right. State, you're saying?
No.
Okay.
No, we cannot make those determinations.
Right.
But no, I mean that's a situation. And Bethel has these new communities that are coming up with hundreds of homes. That's definitely going to change the landscape.
It does.
I understand that, but to be part Camilla? Of the legislator,
Camilla,
you can't. Oh, the mic, please. We can't hear you.
To be part of the legislator to run. And not have a second home, have it as your primary resident, it maybe it should be written to state that.
Well, how about this? Since Kenny thinks that Monticello and Liberty should have their own legislator, maybe second homeowners should have a specific legislator to represent them.
No.
as a special category.
Can we get back to this at another
time? You could have seasonal as well, right?
Seasonal
could be another category.
Sure. Election law controls all that.
Yeah, well.
It's out of our purview.
My only point was that when I look at these numbers to me are, and after much discussion during the comprehensive plan, these numbers don't mean anything in terms of population.
The other problem with the last census was there's a lot of people in our county who live here permanently who did not respond, so they never got counted.
Right, it was COVID too when the census was.
And we lost a congressperson because of that in the whole state of New York.
Correct. Okay, so
moving
should
on.
We move on? How do you want to stop? What do you want to do?
No, we can keep
we
going.
Do
power.
Move on. We have 15 minutes.
15 minutes.
Okay.
On the clock.
Let's go to powers and duties. Are we all on the right page?
Yep.
The county legislature shall exercise all the powers and duties imposed by New York State law or this charter on a board of supervisors or county legislative body, and all powers and duties necessarily implied are incidental thereof. Among such powers and duties, but not by way of limitation, it shall. A. Thank God they're easy words to read. A. Make appropriations, levy taxes, and incur indebtedness, authorize contracts, and adopt the county budget. B. Enact, amend, or repeal the county administrative code. Here we go. Code. Local laws, legalizing acts, or resolutions, and provide for the administrative implementation thereof. C. Adopt by resolution all rules and regulations for its own conduct and procedure. D. By local law, create, alter, combine, or abolish administrative units of county government not headed by elected officers or designated in this charter, establishing or abolishing positions of employment in connection therewith. E. Fix the compensation of all officers and employees paid from county funds, except members of the judiciary, and accept the compensation of any elected official paid from county funds shall not be decreased during the official's term of office. F. Appoint, subject to the provisions of this charter, and at its pleasure remove the county manager, and appoint or confirm, as in the case may be, such other officials as provided in this charter or in the administrative code. G. make or cause to be made such studies, audits, and investigations as it deems necessary, and also obtain professional and technical advice, appoint temporary advisory boards of citizens, subpoena witnesses, administrative oaths, and require the production of books, papers, and other evidence deemed necessary or material to such study, audit, or investigation. H. Equalize real property taxes on the basis of data supplied by the New York State Board of Equalization and Assessment. Various administrative units and towns within the County of Sullivan, pursuant to the applicable provisions of the real property tax law of the State of New York. I didn't know I could speak so much. I. Fix the amount of bonds of officers and employees paid from county funds. J. Fill vacancies in the elective county office except as provided otherwise by this charter. The person or persons so appointed shall hold office by virtue of such appointments until the certification of the first general election after the happening of the vacancy, upon which certification the vacancy shall be filled for the balance of the term, if any, and the person so elected shall take office immediately, and then you have the amendment number, and then you have K. Contract annually with a certified public accountant to conduct an audit of the general purpose financial statements of the county. L.
Well, can I? I have a question.
Yes.
Concerning that, how many years in a row should we have the same accountant doing that?
There's a rule on that, isn't there? That every 5 years or something.
I don't know if there's a rule. I'm just asking that because I just see the same accountant. That's all.
Who's the accountant that you see?
Right now, it's Arias.
Yeah.
They've been doing that for many years.
But it's the same person in the accounting firm. I don't think it has to be the firm itself, but the person actually doing the audit, I believe.
You may be right, but is that not really an arm's length situation? It's something to think about, okay?
I'm not sure.
Do you know if they bid out that contract?
How would you think about it, though, Ken? Because they have the power to change accountants with each legislature, and at the reorganization, they can change.
Right.
But they just don't. So how would you mandate that it be changed? That's not right either. So,
or bid out the accountant.
By the way, I'm not disagreeing with you in principle. I think, yeah, that's probably not the best scenario. How do you get around that?
We could make it no more than so many consecutive years, and then, like a 5 or 3. That's all.
Question I have.
They can accept or reject this idea.
Right. How do they appoint the accountants, what I want to know.
They go through a process.
Do they?
Yeah, everything goes through a process.
But it's
an RFP process.
Well, it is.
Under the state controller.
Huh?
Isn't it under the state controller?
No, not when you hire a local. It's an RFP process usually.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing as designating an official newspaper or anything.
Right.
And each legislature redoes it. Usually it's a formality. I don't even think they give it a thought.
I agree with you. I don't think they do.
I don't know what the recourse is. How do you fix that? How do you improve the process?
Yeah.
You put an artificial date in there that you have to change. I'm not sure that's the best way to do it.
Or if it's an RFP, are you sure there's an RFP?
Knowing how they do things, usually that when you want professional services in an RFP,
it's not a
political patronage type of thing, if you know what I mean.
I know there's a resolution, like for the official newspaper, for the resolution for a lot of...
Yeah, definitely a resolution.
Notices.
And what's interesting on the official newspaper, right, depending who the majority party is, they switch.
Yeah.
Okay?
It used to be the case. I'm not sure they really have much of a choice anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that was always a plum, but.
Yeah, the Republicans will make the reporter number one, theirs for the majority, and, you know, and the Democrat will be secondary.
And printing all the ballots used to be a
Yeah, but that's different
plum.
Now.
Yeah,
it's all a different game now.
Okay, just a thought, not to take up a lot
of time. All right, I gave a little note there, and then we could.
Learn something. Okay.
We're equalized. Did we do equalized property taxes?
Yes, we did.
Okay. We did fix the amount of bonds office employees from the county funds, fill vacancies of elective county.
We talked about that
office,
one.
Except
K is the one we got.
We're up to K. Okay, so L we're up now.
Yep.
Yes.
To the maximum extent permitted by law and consistent with responsible, sound fiscal policies, follow and adhere to substantial. Sustainable energy and sound environment principles and processes in all its policies and operations. M, review, adopt, and update a strategic plan that would establish the recommended programs for the fiscal priorities of the county. It is suggested that said plans be adopted biannually every other year, commencing on June 30th of the year in which the legislature takes office. The adopted strategic plan shall be comprehensive and inclusive of all county divisions, offices, agencies, and contracted services. N.
Who does that?
What?
Yeah. I was just going to say, has anyone ever seen that?
Under Scott Samuelson and Cora Edwards, there was a process, and the public was invited to sit onto it, and they had open meetings about it. It seems to wind up in the county manager's bailiwick right now as part of his generation of information. It's not really adhered to or participated in by the legislators. And there is a comprehensive plan in some place. You can probably go online for it.
For the county?
Yeah.
They're supposed to be working on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Establish and maintain a standing committee that will review, adopt, and update as necessary a six-year capital plan that will establish capital programs and priorities that will assure responsible debt management. Do we have that?
Yes, we do.
The committee shall also consider impacts of the county operating budget. This capital plan will be adopted by a majority vote of the legislature, but division thereof of a two-thirds vote. I, said committee, will be comprised of the following voting members. And now we have the code. Sullivan County Code is listed on this page. Chairman of Management and Budget Committee, Chairman of Public Works Committee, County Manager, County Treasurer, Chairman of Personnel Committee, and Member of the Majority and Minority Caucus.
Commissioners of the county staff
appointed by the County Manager shall be available as resources to the committee and discretion of the County Manager. See, these are some of the things that I think were changed.
That would have been a referendum.
Yeah, I know that.
We never had a referendum. They
a permissive referendum.
The way
that's
I read it back here, it's got to be a referendum if you go
a
back.
A permissive road. Referendum.
That's on the code.
We're on codes. That page is the code.
No, this is a charter.
No, look at the page here. It says Sullivan County Code.
It's kind of color at the top.
It's C. C is charter.
But look at the top of the page. The Capital Planning Committee shall be formulative and make recommendations to the county legislature regarding the strategic plan described in this charter. O, shall create an appointment.
Hey, Bill.
Yes.
We should think about wrapping up and what we want to do next meeting.
Oh, we will. Let me just finish this. I just want to finish this page and a half.
No. It's 6 o'clock. Let's call it.
I just want to do this page and a half.
It's going to.
Let's just.
Okay.
So we can end where it says Charter County Manager. Let's just do this quickly.
Edward.
Chairman of Management and Budget Committee, Chairman of Public Works Committee, I read that already. O shall create and appoint the Council of Government and shall serve in advisory capacity of the county legislature. The Council of Government should include representatives of the legislature, town supervisors, village mayors, board of education, and the county manager, county treasurer, and other appropriate officials.
I have a suggestion for that.
Could I just read this quickly and then?
No, that's not the purpose. We can go through each one and discuss it. So that's why I said, let's end it right there, at the end of that page.
Okay, let's end.
Let's end.
Yeah, we need to end.
Okay, but just on that item alone, I think we have to make a definite how many times a year they must meet, because some of these legislatures do not do it.
I agree.
Okay. Now, let's end there. Next meeting, let's continue reading this and let's have a guest. Who would we like to invite to see if they're available?
What would be the purpose of the guest?
The roles of their responsibility. We have the county manager and the deputy county manager. We have the members of the legislature. We have to ask the county clerk to come, the board of elections to come, and the county treasurer to come.
We also have to finalize this whole video conferencing, don't we?
Yeah, well, that obviously we have to.
Shouldn't we go through the entire charter?
Should we have a guest
before we do the guest?
Okay.
That's what I would recommend.
Okay.
We finish this.
So let's finish the charter next meeting, and
but I think we're getting into sections here where we're probably going to have more discussion.
Good point.
Okay, good point.
Although I think the Council of Government should be discussed.
Okay, so we end there. Next meeting we'll discuss the rest of the charter, and then at next meeting we'll come up with a list of people to ask for guests to come before
good
us.
Good point. So do we make a
everyone
motion?
Everyone approve? Everyone okay there? Paul paused.
Yep,
okay.
I'm here.
Okay.
I agree.
Okay, a motion
to adjourn.
We make a motion
to adjourn.
Maureen, Kenneth, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Aye.
Okay, we're done.
Good job. It's torture.
Good job,
thank
everyone.
You.
Okay, thanks. Feel better.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, feel better, Paul.
Take care.
Appreciate you helping out.
You're welcome. Thanks.